Hi, this is Peter Wingfield. I play Mythos on Highlander, and you're listening to The Blood of Kings.
Welcome, Highlander fans, to Blood of Kings, a Highlander podcast here on the Fandom Podcast Network. On this show, we cover everything from the Highlander universe. And on this show, we are returning to the quickening, the fixening. We, see what I did there? Yeah. We're back fixing IMDb low-rated Highlander episodes. We went back and we looked at all the low-rated Highlander episodes, and we were looking at the ones that obviously are fan least favorites. And Lee, we decided to ask the fans on Blood of Kings themselves, which one are we going to do next? And they have chosen.
And I'm happy about this because they didn't choose the worst episode. We still don't have to rewatch Bless the Child. So I'm happy with this choice yet. Today.
Don't give up on that yet, sir. My co-host Lee and I were excited to talk about Bad Day in Building A and how we are going to fix it. Now, we like to take a realistic approach to fixing these episodes. We don't want to say, oh, we're going to change everything and we're going to, like, you know, go to a different country and, you know, blah, 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 blah. We want to try and stay within the reality of when these shows were produced and written and such. Think of this as a last-minute rewrite. And Lee, I do have to mention something, and you have to keep this in mind when we fix this episode. And listeners, you have to keep this in mind too. This particular episode, I was looking at the DVD Season 1 special features where Bill Panzer is talking specifically about this episode. He called this a bottle episode. And that means they had only 6 days to shoot this episode, not seven. And for those of you that don't know what a bottle episode is, it is a very popular way for episodic television or comedies to basically keep the cost down on the show and shoot all of the episode in usually one location or one room or a few rooms. So in this case, they kept it to like kind of like an office courtroom building, which was in the area of a certain area in Vancouver, a.k.a. Seacouver, and they kept it all in one location. They didn't have to travel around. They didn't have to do any other expensive setups for, like, other location shots, and they didn't have to obviously do any flashbacks in this one because there is no flashback, and there also is no sword fight, and there is no quickening. So keep that in mind when we read some of our guidelines here. And first of all, one of the things, like I said, is we're going to try and realistically change for the better. Keep the budget and the shooting locations in mind. Don't try to make it the production move to another country or bring in other actors. Consider this a last second rewrite. You can incorporate the same actors and guest stars. You can remove and fire an actor if you want to. You can incorporate the same setting in flashbacks, although this episode does not have flashbacks, and you can change the mortality of a character. Try not to change the main actor's motives as to what they do in the episode that may consider be out of character throughout the series. You want to kind of keep the true character of our heroes of the episode here. Before we get into the plot here, Lee, when you first approached watching this episode again, did anything kind of come to you going, you know, this wasn't what I was thinking, or this was better than I thought, or it was worse than I thought? What were your first reactions?
I mean, first off, we got to give Jay Brazzo real kudos for doing a lot with very little for his role. I really would have liked to have seen Stoj Kaminsky come back in several times. I mean, I believe him as a cop. I believe him, as kind of the guy in charge trying to keep a three-ring circus under wraps. I liked him. And, you know, maybe it's just because of, you know, what happened with Stan, but I really liked seeing Richie kind of existing in this world relatively independent of Duncan, but also the relationship that he had with this guy, Stanley. And I can't believe I never noticed. He's like, yeah, you need to stay out of the fencing. You're going to meet some really bad people. when he's selling goods, it's like, I mean, we know that he starts sword fighting, so he meets some bad people that way, but he also met these guys by trying to steal things so he could sell them on the black market.
I'm glad you brought up Jay Brazzo, because I had a chance to meet him when I went on that Vancouver / Seacouver tour with Andy Sloan. And we had lunch with him. Great guy. Got to know him a little bit and his background. And he really enjoyed his short tenure on Highlander. And it was just really nice to get to know the guy. I love his Facebook post. He's great on social media. So anyway, let's get into the plot here. McLeod, Tessa, and Richie are taken hostage in a court building by assassin Brian Slade when Tessa goes inside with Richie to pay off her collection of parking tickets. Slade has members of his gang in the courthouse disguised as workers, and they kill his escorts, freeing him. Duncan is knocked out, waking up a few minutes later. Slade demands the police SWAT team give him a helicopter, then gets mad when he sees snipers on it. He grabs a hostage, saying he's going to kill him to show he's serious. Duncan says the man has a wife and kids, and which he talked about earlier, and offers himself up to the sacrifice. After being killed, McLeod awakens and takes out a gang member. He heads into the hallway and finds a janitor's closet along with the janitor's little daughter. Duncan has to take her to the bathroom. Then he hides her while he skewers a gang member with a trash-collecting spike. Ouch. Duncan and the girl go into the judge's chambers to hide, and the girl insists Duncan tell her a story. He tells her about a city of fairy people that mostly disappear as more people came to live on Earth, but that sometimes comes to help people. He then hides the girl and takes out another gang member. Slade runs to see what's going on. While he's gone, Tessa calls the police to tell them to not storm the place and risk more lives. Slade grabs Tessa as a large chopper is brought in. He goes to the judge's chamber and finds McLeod waiting for him. Duncan challenges him to a duel, betting Slade he can't reach his gun before he grabs his trash spike. Slade is reluctant, but he does, and is skewered by McLeod. McLeod gets a little girl back to her father and borrows his shirt, telling Richie and Tessa he'll meet him at home, and then heading to a back area of the property for a few moments alone. When the drama unfolds inside, Randy McFarlane reports from outside Duncan and the others won't talk to her in the inn, though she surmises that McLeod's death was staged earlier. All right. So a couple of thoughts that I have here is this is Highlander's Die Hard episode, Dielander. Yep. there was always a Highlander-esque episode on episodic television ever since Die Hard came out.
Oh yeah.
And I remember there was a very special Booker episode that also did this.
Yep. And Community.
Andrew Devoff played a terrorist in a similar plot the year before in the movie Toy Soldiers, where he took over a prep school. You remember that one?
Oh, yeah, with Ensign Wesley Crusher somehow pretending he's from New York.
Yes.
And
a mobster son, right?
And Samwise Gamgee was in it, and Lou Gossett Jr. Yes. And Marcus Brody. I can never remember the actor's name, but got lost in his own museum.
Denham Elliott. Yeah. Yep. So he's kind of been typecast for 2 years in a row here. He's very good at playing villains. Yeah. He comes later to play an immortal in Little Tin God. Yep. Is that what, if I remember correctly? And I got a chance to meet Andrew Devoff at a convention in Atlanta years ago. And I had him sign one of my Highlander cards. I had his character's picture from Little Tin God. And he was a very cool guy. He remembered his episode of Highlander, and he really liked it.
I always think of him, though, as not Robert Davi.
Yes. Not Robert Davi. Yes.
Like, he's been in a lot of stuff, and you know, he's earned his career, but like he's not Robert Davi. And like I someday want to have him sign a picture of Robert Davi and see if even he notices the difference.
He's like you, though. He always plays villains.
True enough. Well, it's a skill set. So
When I went on that Seacouver tour with Andy Sloan, I got a chance to visit the outside of the Bad Dane building, a location, which was pretty cool. Didn't get a chance to go inside because stuff was happening, but I don't think it's a courtroom, actually, if I remember correctly. So we got some reviews here. This comes from IMDb review. I guess the Highlander, this is Die Hard episode of Highlander. Never saw the movie, but I noticed a few fans saying this. The bad parts, the plot holes left at the end. How does Duncan manage to not get called in later by the police for questioning, and not to mention the media attention that would apply? Doesn't everyone who was a hostage have to give a statement and therefore be revealed that Duncan's role was? And they said they could have edited out Randy talking to herself, walking back and forth. That was a waste of time at the very end. The janitor who had his kid in the closet area to play because her mother couldn't look after her would probably be up on child endangerment charges. In today's world, the courthouse always has criminals in it. Not exactly the best place to leave a kid alone. Best parts, they said, the way Duncan takes out the bad guys. There's a poetry to it. Duncan and the little girl have some cute scenes together. Tessa shows her bravery and smarts. She stands up to Slade. Commissioner Kaminsky and a SWAT commander are in charge of the hostage situation. They're both unintentionally hilarious as they keep squabbling. Kaminsky in particular is a drama queen. I laughed so hard when he said to the SWAT commander, "Where do you think we are? Beirut?" the parking ticketing stuff was actually funny, and she got ticket again, like during the hostage situation. Let me see. What do we got here? Our friend Billy Douche, he did a review on Highlander, and she says, another funny thing when the cop says, "Can you think of anything we're forgetting here?" And Kaminsky says, "Yeah, Munich."
Mm-hmm.
If you guys know your history from the terrible incident, the Munich Olympics. And she goes on to say, yes, this is a mortal diehard and pretty much different from every other episode in the series. I still enjoyed it mostly because it was fun. There was a particularly high body count, lots of action. Duncan gets knocked out and then shot to death, but still managed to take out five bad guys armed with a skewer. And even the predictable little girl subplot didn't get annoying, as was rather cute. Brian Slade, 7-time murderer, was one of the more interesting season one villains, and he wasn't an immortal. It's obviously had the hots for Tessa, who appeared a lot more upset when they took Duncan away than she would have been. Tessa was all dignified and courageous and more fun than she has been up to until now, and Richie was a hoot. She mentions this is one of the few Highlander episodes with no flashbacks. Bits and pieces, she said, Randy was back in the credits again. Just like in Die Hard, one of the bad guys had a tall blonde who looked like Gudnoff.
Yeah, and you know what's really frustrating? He lived.
Yeah.
You know, like, there should have been at least one actual fight. And it should have been.
He should have pretended to die and then came back and tried to shoot him outside, and then some lucky cop shot him instead.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. She said the room where a janitor left his young daughter was full of cleaning supplies. No parent worth their salt would leave small children in a room full of poisons. Well, I guess not as bad as armed assassins outside willing to shoot people.
No.
She also said there were several some fun touches. One seat had Kaminsky with two phones, one to each ear, and they kept putting tickets on Duncan's T-Bird. This was directed by Jorge Montesi, and he directed also Innocent Man and Family Tree, all in that first year, 1992. Kevin Droney also wrote the episode, and he also wrote The Hunters and wrote Family Tree as well. So I want to get your thoughts on the cast. Maybe we can start with Andrew Devoff. I know you've talked about him a little bit, Bo. Always liked this guy, though. He always played a good villain, and he kind of commands the scene that he's in. And in this episode, he's got this kind of warrior mentality. He likes how Duncan decided to give himself up as a fellow warrior. He sensed that Duncan was a warrior the way he tried to take down that one guy before Duncan got knocked out. There is a little bit of honor to him, yeah. I guess, Lee. Yeah.
Well, esprit de corps, something like that. You know, I really think he did a lot with the very little given to him. He definitely wasn't given wardrobe or, you know, really anything other than a gun to say that he was a soldier, but he had the bearing. He was able to set his shoulders right, do things well. I would have liked to have seen a little bit better end for him, but, you know, yeah, a little bit more decisive.
Right, right. We talked about Jay Brazos, Commissioner Kaminsky. He was in one of the episodes, if I remember correctly. Amanda Wiss, of course, is Randy, does the reporting from outside. She has higher aspirations, of course, of maybe getting a big network job, yeah, which is why she was kind of walking around and talking to herself.
Well, and I think if what she's doing here, this would have been a great way to set her up to really start digging deeper into Duncan. I think that would have made a better line. And, you know, we were talking with her at the con, and, you know, I mean, fans been saying forever, she would have been a great watcher.
Yeah.
If we'd found a way to do that, I think that would have been really good. Cause she is a compelling actress. It's great having that female character that's not there to be either a femme fatale or a love interest, right, for Duncan.
Exactly. And we talked the possibility about our fixings with this, cause there's been a few here in season one, where if she was privy to Duncan's secret world of immortality. Yeah.
And, you know, she's smart enough that she would have found out. And it's always seemed like they're leading to that, especially in rewatching. But,
yeah. So Bob Anderson was a sword master again. Do you think he was on set for this episode?
You know, I don't think so, because there's not much swording. I think other than, you know, making probably the world's most dangerous trash pick, because usually, like, you don't need, you know, 3 feet of steel to pick up trash. You just need that little spike. That's all they ever use.
Yeah.
I did also want to kind of throw somebody under the bus. Duncan Fraser as the SWAT commander was just awful.
Yeah, he was.
And, you know, like,
yeah,
they always play like, okay, one guy is, you know, trying to control the situation. Then you always got that gung-ho SWAT guy.
Duncan, you're fired.
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, A, he's a Fraser, and B, we've already got a Duncan. You know, I mean, the Fraser.
There you go. Oh, I see what you did there.
You like that?
I see what you there. Yeah, it was good. A little bit of trivia. As we mentioned, Andrew Devoff plays the villain Brian Slade. He would go on later to play the immortal enemy of Duncan, Gavriel Larka, in Little Tin God. This is the first episode in the series not to depict a flashback scene. Most Highlander episodes include flashbacks, of course. This episode takes place entirely in the present. Duncan and his foes have never met each other before. At the door, as Duncan is walking out of the building, he's wearing a Malcolm X hat. Malcolm X was also filmed in 1992. This episode also features no other immortals except Duncan. The villains are mortal humans, and the plot involves a regular hostage situation. The episode features Duncan killing mortals, Brian and his gang. Later episodes depicting Duncan hesitating to kill mortals or mostly avoiding it. So let's get your final comments on the unfixed original version of Bad Day in Building A.
Pointless. Just kind of, you know, despite what was said in a couple of the reviews, these weren't really good fights. You know, yeah, it's these guys don't fight Duncan, and he just punches them a few times or stabs a couple of them. You know, they're set up to be like military trained, but nobody actually trained them to look like military for the purposes of this thing, you know, and there are actors that know how to do that, especially up in Vancouver. But I think there's a lot of missed opportunities and a lot of things that don't make sense. And I'm partly thinking it's because the mentality that Duncan has to do everything. And I think that so much, you know, just did not work.
That's a good point about Duncan having to do everything. You know, why didn't another hostage step up, you know, and do something, you know, to help? Or maybe he could have worked with someone else, or, you know, make it something a little interesting. Maybe we can talk about that later with possible ways to fix it. But that's a really good point.
How about you?
Because when I was watching this again, I'll be honest with you, I haven't watched this in a long time. I think the last time I watched this was when Norman and I did our see it or skip it of season one, you know, and you know, this is one of the ones I usually skip it when I'm doing a rewatch, you know. But I didn't hate it as I originally kind of thought I did, or the hate that it gets, you know. And I think there's a part of this episode that gets a little kind of thrown under the bus, a little too quickly, maybe, yeah, you know. Because there's stuff to enjoy about it. It's I think the fact that we're not dealing with immortals other than Duncan is one of the big knocks against it. But I think the challenge that the writers were having was we need to have this guy deal with challenges and obstacles that don't always deal with another immortal. There's other dangers out there. We need to have him dealing with other situations that put his life and the people that he cares about in mortal danger. And so thus an episode like this was done. So, all right. So we're going to take a quick break from the immortal world of Highlander, let you know what other great shows are on the Fandom Podcast Network as we'll come back and figure out how to fix this. We'll be right back. Thank you for listening. We hope you're enjoying this podcast. We'd like to continue to feed your ears by inviting you to listen to these other great shows on the Fandom Podcast Network. It starts with our flagship show, Culture Clash, discussing the latest in entertainment pop culture. Blood Kings, Immortals Take Notice, our show covering the entire Highlander universe. Couch Potato Theaters, where we celebrate our favorite movies. Time Warp, the Fandom Flashback podcast discussing a year in movies and our favorite retro movie and TV pop culture topics. Good Evening, discussing all things Alfred Hitchcock. Union Federation, our Star Trek and Orville show. Hair Metal, the 80s and early 90s rock metal podcast. Type 40, our show covering the time-traveling Doctor Who universe with host Dan Hadley. Lethal Mullet, an 80s and 90s action film podcast with host Adam P. O'Brien. Also, check out the Lethal Mullet Network for more great podcasts. What a Piece of Junk, a Star Wars podcast with hosts Scott, Derek, and Nathan. Making Treks, a Star Trek podcast, a deep dive into the final frontier with hosts Mark Newbold and Adam P. O'Brien. And check out our newest shows, The Fandom Show, our monthly Fandom Podcast Network live YouTube exclusive show about the month's hottest topics in fandom, and the FPN True Believers MCU podcast, discussing the Marvel Cinematic Universe and the related Marvel television and streaming MCU universe, including the connections to the original Marvel comics. You can find the Fandom Podcast Network on several platforms. Please subscribe to the Fandom Podcast Network YouTube channel to receive notifications of new podcast episodes and live events. You can enjoy all of the Fandom Podcast Network audio podcasts on our master feed at fpnet.podbean.com. The Fandom Podcast Network is on all major podcast platforms, including Apple Podcasts and iTunes. You can find the Fandom Podcast Network on Facebook. You can email us at fandompodcastnetwork@gmail.com. You can also find the Fandom Podcast Network on Instagram at Fandom Podcast Network and on Twitter at FanPod Network. Thank you for listening, and remember, respect others and enjoy your fandom. All right, welcome back to Blood of Kings, a Highlander podcast here on the Fandom Podcast Network. We are doing the fan's choice for Highlander The Fixing, where we are fixing an IMDb lowest rated Highlander episode. And unfortunately, Bad Day in Building A falls under that category. And we like to ask our friends there on Blood of Kings what they have to say about fixing episodes. And Lee, I put a poll on Blood of Kings and asked, you know, and I think we put about like five different ones. And then there was like another one that was added by people. Mm-hmm. And Bad Day in Building A won by a landslide, followed by Free Fall. And I actually voted for Free Fall. Maybe we can come back and visit that one. Then Wrath of Khali.
That's the one I voted for. That.
That's the one you voted for? Okay. Actually, would be a good one to revisit.
I was kind of surprised it was at the bottom of the barrel, though.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's in third place. Yeah. So the next three we had was Deadly Medicine, followed by one vote for Bless the Child and one vote for Family Tree.
Whoever made that one vote, can we just like kind of remove them from the group? We don't need that kind of negativity here.
you know who voted for Bless the Child?
I'm going to say Nick Ward.
Nope.
Who?
The director, Clay Morris. I love Clay's sense of humor. I got a chance to interact with him on the WatcherCon, and I hosted his panel, and he's great. He's got a great sense of humor about the couple of bad episodes that he directed, which also include The Zone. So yep. Go Clay.
You know, I'll do Blessed Child if we can get Clay on to this part with
him. Oh, yeah?
I think he'd be okay. A great guest on this.
All right. Kelly Doak said on my post, how can Bad Dane Building A even be on this list? It's a perfect gem of an episode. I sent some sarcasm there. With the little winky face and laughing emoji.
I'm really hoping so.
But our...
I'm really hoping so. Otherwise, she should probably have her water checked, because...
Yeah. our friend Norman Lau said, Bad Day in Building A is a fine action-adventure episode and a decent Highlander episode. Free Fall literally needs fixed to correct an important piece of canon. Corey Dallas replied to Norman saying, I rarely disagree with you, but wow, Bad Day in Building A and the word fine and decent don't belong in the same sentence with this episode. They could have left off the Building A part of the title and just called it bad.
Yeah. I still think Dylander is the best title for this episode.
Yeah, exactly. But Norman goes on to and replies to Corey saying, it's fine as a standard fare for an action-adventure drama in the early 90s, but the context of these episodes that need fixed, Free Fall, and the scene where Mac refers to his katana from a clansman must retcon to fall in line with the samurai. And Corey says that is definitely an oversight and needs to be corrected. Wes Cronin says, of the episodes on this list, Bad Day in Building A is the one I watch the least. If I want that kind of action, I just watch Die Hard. Better villain and better dialogue. Bless the Child isn't that great either. Why on earth would they use the same actress that plays Duncan's wife when he is living with the Native Americans? I know a lot of people were recast during the run of the show, but that's a pretty freaking important character. And then Ryan Christopher says, freeze, mister. And then, Elizabeth Oak says, honestly, I love Bad Day in Building A, mostly for Tessa. And how come Black Tower didn't make the list? Well, Black Tower was a close contender. It still may get a fixing. It was definitely up there.
You know, or as we call it, the other Dylander episode.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. Okay, so let's get into how we would do the fixing on Bad Day in Building A. I just want to start off by saying, Lee, I think the episode name really hurts this episode. It's a bad, bad name for an episode.
And it doesn't, there's no nuance to it. You know, it is correct, but in no way descriptive. There's no play on words. And I will say, like, this, the first season, none of these things really made sense. You know,
what about the skewer in the courtroom? Maybe something like that.
Yeah. I mean, I don't want to think too hard about this episode, so I'm not going to even try to think of a good name for it. I've already done my thinking about it.
Well, what about a fairy tale in the closet?
this great episode that Todd...
I know. Bayonet in the bathroom. How about that?
I think that one's already been done, on a certain type of website. Or we could be like, hey, just follow this long-haired guy in a horrible shirt who says he knows your dad.
There you go. Any other possible name changes for this? What do you think?
Delete.
We could probably do a playoff Brian Slade's name, maybe. I don't know. But Lee, how would you fix this episode?
Well, the first thing I'd do is I'd cut out the first couple minutes because I really don't need to see them getting in the car, waiting for Richie, talking about parking tickets, then driving for a couple minutes. Like, all of the there's no setup to it. And like, there are, you know, other than Tessa needs to pay parking tickets, which usually traffic court is not in the state criminal court.
Right.
You know, like, if I got to pay my parking tickets, I'm not going to the same place where they're, you know, say, trying, you know, a capital murderer.
Right.
I'd take that out. I would do the setups a little bit differently. And I would remove one of our blondes. I would actually take Tessa out of this episode and have Randy. Really? I'd have Randy McFarland in there.
Be like, have her be the one of the hostages.
Yeah. Her and her guy. You know, kind of steal that thing from Highlander 2, where what's his name, Templeton Peck. That's all he'll ever be to me, or Jerry, and his camera guy or his sound guy are figuring out, you know, what's going on the ground. Have those two like doing a live broadcast that nobody knows about, because that gets her inside. That gets her a scoop. That gets her, you know,
okay,
being a reporter in a way that would matter to the plot instead of just being there, which is really what they did with her. And then the Tessa and Duncan loving each other is only there for emotional heartstrings. There's no connection between what they do. Second thing I'd do is I would have Richie not get caught. I'd have Richie and Stan find the little girl and keep her safe.
Richie and Stan? What?
Stan is the old con man.
Oh, I see what you're saying. And then what's Duncan doing?
Well, here's where I'm going with it. Because at the start of this, Duncan is chilling in his car, just like Argyle at the beginning of Die Hard. I mean, he's just like, you know, just sitting there waiting, you know, trying to be a cool guy. Baby, have I ever lied to you? You know? And then he sees what's going on and he recognizes, okay, this is not a good situation. You know, maybe he sees the guys, you know, the construction crew pull up, but they don't look right. And so he follows them in. And that's how he gets in the mix. So you get Stan and Richie, or Stanley, the character, not Stan Kirsch, and Richie keeping this little girl safe. You've got Duncan going in and getting in the middle of it. Then you got Randy McFarland in a position to really find out, you know, or be confused by what's happening with Duncan. Right. And then you've got, you know, a certain amount of drama that can be done. And I, like I said, I would much rather have had better stunt guys do this, because there was a chance for some good, you know, Jason Bourne style action. It might not have been where Adrian was yet in terms of fight choreography, because he had done a season on War of the Worlds before this, but maybe not quite up to where we see, like, say, season two, when he takes down Xavier's gang in Unholy Alliance Part 1.
Right.
But I would have liked to have seen something more that, like that, instead of like, I'm just stepping out of a random place and punching you in the face. I would have liked to have seen a little bit more special forces. And I'm going to halfway break a rule, keeping the same setting.
Uh-oh.
And I think it could be done, but I'm going to put the flashback in, because it was sort of mentioned. Munich. When they talk about Munich, one of the first responses was creating a better special forces operation worldwide.
Right.
And shortly after that, they had the Iranian embassy in Kensington in South London.
Yeah, because when that whole thing in Munich and the hostage happening at the airport, it was a cluster.
Yeah, because nobody really knew how to do that. That wasn't, you know, people weren't doing special warfare outside
hostage of rescue and SWAT stuff. And so
you have like these, you know, you have Munich and then you have the hostage rescue in Iran.
So are you saying you would have a flashback to Munich?
Well, actually I would go to London and the SAS kind of recapturing of the Iranian embassy after it was taken over by terrorists.
Okay. So here's the thing. You have to keep in mind the budget of the show.
Oh,
okay.
Yeah.
So if you're breaking this thing, are you using actual real footage from when that happened?
Yeah, because you can get the same outside footage. And they already had at least 50 extras that they were using. So the only thing you would change is get different costumes. And you could even keep a lot of the same weapons, because when the British SAS went in, they used MP5s, which several of the cops are using. And they had AR-15s. And, you know, the terrorists that came in were using stuff like Tech-9s, were using smaller caliber weapons, that sort of thing.
Right.
You could easily film interiors in this space and just say, hey, that's, you know, the embassy in London. And so set up like this thing, you know, when Andrew Devoff is kind of grilling Duncan, he's like, oh, I can tell, a warrior, you know, and like that can be our flashback so that he knows this. I was originally going to say World War II, but did want to keep it in the bottle episode. But that would also right. set up what we come to learn more about Duncan just a few episodes from now, because we do find out that he fought in the French Resistance.
Gotcha.
But it would set up a skill set. And it would set up that look in the camera at the end of just the kind of violence he's seen. Because, I mean, we've seen duels, but we don't realize how much of the darkness of humanity he's seen. And I think that would be a great way to... to do that. So I would put that flashback in there. I would definitely have a fight with not Carl, whatever that guy's that character's name is. He's not Carl. And I would definitely
the blonde German I guess terrorist clone.
Yeah. And somewhere in there, now I have a trash picker. Ho, ho, ho.
That's two on the nose, dude.
Well, I mean, come on. You got to throw it in there. But, like, I would have more special forces style fighting, right. you know, and, you know, kind of a mix of, you know, maybe like some World War II spy style techniques. You know, right. Duncan's older. You know, he's not just, you know, flavor of the month in terms of technique. But I really would like to have seen an explanation for him being able to do this kind of thing. And there is absolutely no reason for him not to pick up the firearms that are being left behind. Because we do know that he uses guns.
Right.
So, and this is, you know, honor or not, he's trying to save people. And that silenced 9mm that he leaves behind in the bathroom after he traumatizes an 8-year-old girl by letting her see him stab somebody. that would help.
Yeah, then picked up by Slade later. Yeah.
Exactly.
Okay. So you're cheating a little bit by throwing in a flashback.
But we can keep the same location. It would just be some set dressing and different costumes.
Okay, I see that. It's funny because I was kind of thinking the same thing. So that's good. I like that. Okay. Well, one of the things while I was rewatching this episode was how personal that Duncan was taking the fight to Slade. And not just, it felt like there was more, there could have been more to explain how he was ready to kill this guy and not save him and not have him go through the judicial system again and possibly escape. Not just because that he had a gun to Tessa, but he was just like, he was kind of like, you know, Rambo was while he was in that jungle, you know, killing those bad sheriffs trying to, you know, kill him and stuff. And so I felt there was... What's
he didn't
that?
Kill any of the sheriffs.
True.
One of them fell out of a helicopter.
But he was going down a hole though that made him turn into something. And I think that it would have been nice for him to experience some PTSD there. And that was kind of what I was getting out of that scene in my mind as I was kind of rewriting this episode. My idea to fix this episode is, you don't change the mortality of anybody. You keep everything the same, everyone the same. The only mortal in this is Duncan. But this has been one of my pet peeves, and we've talked about this, that it seems like the only people that can really stand up to immortals with fighting style, whether it's, you know, swords, guns, whatever, is other immortals. Mm-hmm. And I've always wished that Highlander would have an mortal be able to actually challenge and threaten an immortal in fighting style and weapons. And the closest that we've ever had is Horton, which is why we've liked him so much, because he was a mortal that was able to threaten the lives of immortals, you know, to what, you know, the powers and tools that he had at his.
And we did have Hideo Kotto.
What's that?
Hideo Kotto was the other.
True. Yeah. So, I was thinking that let's throw out a whole ticket thing.
Mm-hmm.
Tess isn't going there to ticket. Tess is going there because she witnessed one of Slade's murders and is able to identify him. And not only that, Duncan knew the person that was killed. And that could be done in a quick flashback in that whole area without having to really go anywhere.
Yeah.
And it could have happened recently. And that's another thing that kind of bugs me too, Lee, is that when it comes to flashbacks in the Highlander TV series, they never go back that far. They always go way far back. You know, like I think the 60s was one of the earliest or the youngest, I guess, flashbacks they've done. Maybe 50s. I can't remember.
Well, 1989, but it would have been nice if like, they, you can't tell the difference between 1989 and 1992. Like that's.
No, you can't. It would have been nice if there was something from like a flashback, like he's an assassin for a reason. And Duncan knew of his work, but could never catch him. Okay. And it would have been nice if they were maybe a quick little, maybe there was an assassination in the '70s or something like that, you know, it, and that could have been done in seconds. You know, they just, he could have just been with a gun somewhere nearby and put, throw on some 70 clothes on someone. He knew this person. And then the person that Duncan, or that, Tessa knew was like maybe a colleague or a former friend or a former lover, who knows, something like that. And that she witnessed that and that she had to be there to actually testify so that when he is escaping and he sets up his escape with his friend, she's in more danger than she normally is as a regular hostage. But Duncan still finds a way to like put himself in harm's way and get killed. And I like the idea, and I'm going to go, and I was like, I want someone else to help Duncan because I don't think that he should be able to do it himself. And I also think he should have had a cell phone by then. You know?
I did not have a cell phone until 8 years after this episode aired.
Yeah, but people had cell phones. People had cell phones. So I don't know. And I like the idea of him being able to, this is like lifting from, this is lifting from, Die Hard, him being able to communicate maybe with Randy, but he also has the help. I like the idea of having the help of Richie also on the loose. And then maybe Richie eventually gets captured or something like that. But him helping personally, I would have gotten rid of the whole kid thing. We don't need that. I like the idea of having actual some courtroom drama first, maybe as a setup instead of getting the final, judgment, because I would have liked to have seen like maybe a jury saying guilty, guilty, guilty because of Tessa's testimony. And then we get into it and stuff like that. And because I feel that when you finally kill Slade at the end, there's personal reasons by it, other than the fact that not only is Tessa, his love, also been in danger, but also he knew the people that he's assassinated prior. And I think that him just being of the seven people that he was known to have killed, I think he could have killed more. And I think having him have a little more of a background would have made him a lot more interesting as a villain.
No, I like that. And I propose
I'm fine with Jay Brazzo as the commissioner still, maybe not having to deal. I say fire that police commissioner guy or whatever he was, that other SWAT
Black
guy.
Commander.
Yeah, and I'm fine with some communication going on. I would have been nice if there was some communication behind the scenes. Maybe Duncan's able, or even Richie's able to dial out and talk to someone. That would have been great. Randy, I'm sure, is fine where she is. Not too much of a big change there, but I think that there should have been more stakes in the stupid parking ticket thing. That would have been a lot more interesting if Slade had a past and... Let's make immortals more dangerous for immortals. That's been my thing. You know, there's got to be a master swordsman mortal out there that can kill a immortal and not realize that it wasn't immortal. You know?
And I think, what was I going to say? There's a happy medium between ours here. If Duncan knows this guy from the hostage rescue, and he's going to...
Wait, you mean that? You mean Slade?
No,
villain?
Slade from like if Slade actually led part of that team.
The villain led what team?
The team that helped to rescue the the Iranian embassy.
As if there was a past with his friends. Yeah. Gotcha. Okay.
And so, like, right. He's actually got a reason to like this guy, and then suddenly has a reason to let him die with honor. Because I mean, he could have just snuck up on him like he did everybody else and just skewered him.
Is he still a master assassin, though? That's the thing.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
But, you know, you got this guy that had a skill set that let him be a good guy. But, you know, speaking as somebody with a skill set like that, there's not a lot of options of using it in a nice way past a certain age.
I think the subplot of the girl who was hiding the whole time and really wasn't you know, he, it's not like he picked up the girl and threatened her directly. Yeah. I think that and the, and her father and all of that. I know people like that fairy tale scene between Duncan and the little girl, because it's probably the best part of the whole episode. Yeah. But I think if the other parts of it were written better, it wouldn't matter. You know, so I say, get rid of the jerk SWAT commander, get rid of the girl and the father, and really give a more personal reason why Duncan and Tessa are there, because Duncan is trying to stay out of it. That's why he still stays out in the car. But when he's, you know, he hears shots and stuff, you know, because he tries to stay out of the limelight, obviously. But, you know, when you're like witness something and the cops are there and stuff like that, where is that medium of how Duncan can still stay out of the limelight? But his girl who he loves was witness to this, and there's no way of getting out of that. It's kind of like the person that was talking about how there really was no, you know, why weren't the cops following up on Duncan? Why, you know, why didn't they question him, you know? And, you know, that was kind of just left out there.
Well, and why when you rescue hostages, everybody becomes under arrest, because unless you know exactly who was there, you don't know who the bad guys are. So you arrest them all, you separate them, you get the stories, the ones that match up, you start to believe, and you winnow out the truth.
And you know what? You could have actually still done this episode without Duncan pretending to die at all.
Yeah.
You know, you could have, you know, they could have still killed a hostage. I think that's what they should have done. They should have killed like maybe the old guy that was friends with Richie or something like that. You know,
theoretically they killed the lawyer, but we don't see it.
True. And you know, you're not really supposed to. Yeah. So, I mean, there could have been some people dying in this, but I don't think even Duncan had to die in this episode just to prove that he was mortal, because he still had to answer questions. But I almost kind of feel like he should have been outside. Okay. He should have been that ghost that snuck in the back as soon as the guns were shot. He does his damage. He kills the bad guy. And the only people that really see this is Tessa and maybe Richie. And that they can say there was someone here that killed these guys, but we don't know who he was. And then he escapes or does something. I don't know how he gets out. Maybe that could have been prearranged or something like that. But I'm just trying to think of a realistic out for Duncan, so he's not having to answer to the police, because normally all the hostages are treated as enemies until they figure out otherwise. Yeah. Right.
Well, and
if it's done correctly,
one thing I'd definitely take out, like, just remove him being asleep parked in a crosswalk. Like, why did they even do that? That was just like the most ridiculous choice. Yeah. You know, almost every government building has a parking garage. I don't know why this would be any different.
Right. You know,
maybe we're establishing, oh yes, that's the sign for building A in the background, but you know, like why would we even need to do that? You mentioned something and I wanted to bring it up. The fairy tale that he tells.
Yes.
That should have been woven into the source.
I mean the movie that nobody likes.
Yeah. But imagine like we actually find out that this high walled city was real. And that was part of the reason why they were going back, what they were trying to preserve. Instead of weird guy moving really fast and leather daddy.
Well, if we fix the source, let's remember that, okay? Yeah. what about calling this episode Assassin's Dues? Or Assassin's Creed?
Everything is permitted except that.
All right, man. Final thoughts on Bad Day and Building A. I think we fixed it. Do you think we fixed it?
I think we fixed it. And I think if they redo the series, this is one that could be used as a good bridge episode. So I think
if they do it right,
if they try to weave in a season long plot line and film it as a season, because then we could have our flashback. We could have the relationship to other episodes.
What I liked about us fixing this episode is we didn't have to say that Slade had to be an immortal.
Yeah.
You know, I think it's more interesting that he's not an immortal. And I think that we have to try to keep true to the writer's challenges of there doesn't have to be an immortal baddie every week.
Yeah. I also did want to mention that Slade is a pair of shoulder pads away from being in yet another Color Me Bad suit.
Yeah, those 90s jackets, those will do it for you.
Gotta love double-breasted, you know.
Well, I think we did well with that. I'm proud of that. We fixed it well. Anyway, let's get into some contact information here. Subscribe to the Fandom Podcast Network on YouTube. And please, we could use your help there. And any new episodes that go up there, you'll get a notification. Our master feed for all of our audio podcasts, which include Blood of Kings, can be found on Podbean at fpnet.podbean.com. Fandom Podcast Network can also stream and download on that Podbean app. Fandom Podcast Network is on all major podcast platforms, which, of course, include Apple Podcasts and iTunes. You can find Blood of Kings on Twitter and Instagram. And also, if you're listening and you're not part of our awesome Facebook group, head on over to Blood of Kings, the Highlander fandom group. That's where we do these fun polls, and we put up another bunch of great Highlander stuff. We've got a wonderful group there, so make sure you join us. Ask to get in there, and we will do so. If you remember the old Highlander collectible card game, we have a special Blood of Kings page for that, the Blood of Kings Highlander CCG collectible card game and gaming discussion group page. If you'd like to contact us directly, you can email us at bloodykingspodcast@gmail.com. My name is Kevin. I am on Twitter and Instagram @Spartan_Phoenix. Lee, where can we find you?
You can find me wearing an ugly shirt, sleeping in a car parked in the crosswalk right in front of a government building like an idiot. Otherwise, you can find me on Twitter and Instagram @TheWayOfTheWay.
Okay, I got a quick question for you. I have to ask you. So you have one of those Thunderbirds.
I do.
And it is it convertible? Or
it's
hardtop?
A hardtop. The convertible will rust out, and it's actually 7 motors to get the convertible top up with that, and they never work together.
I have a question for you though. Let's say though that you do have the convertible, and in the beginning of this episode, when Duncan opens the door and closes the door after Tessa gets in, and he gets in the car, and then all of a sudden Richie just like jumps in on the back. Are you cool with that?
Oh no, he was getting stabbed. That one. I would have been like, pardon me, young man. You remember how the day you met me, I cut somebody's MF head off? It's time you disrespect my whip.
That's pretty funny. I like that. Dude, you don't do that with those shoes you're wearing. That's good. That's good. All right. So we have, what do we have coming up here? Okay. Two ways you can support us. First of all, reviews, Apple Podcast, iTunes reviews, or if any of your podcast platforms include reviews, please search for Fandom Podcast Network and then leave a review for Blood of Kings there. Also, we have a T Public store with some awesome Blood of Kings Highlander logos you can put on T-shirts and other fun apparel. So what do we have coming up next? Well, we're going to be looking at Band of Brothers. Lee, we want to go back and talk about that. We also are going to be celebrating, or at least acknowledging, the, 30th anniversary now of Highlander 2?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, Highlander 2. I think it'll be like a birthday party for a cousin you sort of like, but haven't really talked to since you were kids. It's like, hey, man, what have you been up to?
We will be doing two parts on that. We're going to be doing a retrospective on it. But we're also going to be doing our own fixing on it. That will be interesting. So stay tuned for that. Thank you, first of all, everyone, for listening. We appreciate that. And Lee, thanks again, as always, man. It's fun.
Always a blast, sir. Always a blast. Just remember to pay your parking tickets next time, okay?
Yes. These fixings are sure fun. I'm Kevin on behalf of Lee. Thanks everyone for listening. Join us again next time here on the Fandom Podcast Network for another episode of Blood of Kings. That sensation you are feeling is the fixing, because we just fixed you, bro. We are one. We are immortals. Goodbye, everyone.